Chapter 22, Blood on the Scales.
Now hold on to me, pretty baby, if you wanna fly. I'm gonna melt the fever sugar, rolling back your eyes. We're gonna ride the race cars. We're gonna dance on fire.
This is obscene. Lieutenant Colonel Griffin, the second highest ranking clone officer on Naboo, spat out the words, clenching one fist as he stared at the display floating in front of them. On his left side, Group Captain Rift, the next highest ranking clone, was swearing silently, his lips moving in what Rex recognized as Mandalorian, Twi'lek, and Huttese curses. Colonel Alpha, the highest-ranking clone trooper not only on Naboo, but in the entire RNSF, was silent. Only the set of his jaw let Rex see how angry he was. It took almost 20 seconds before Alpha was able to unclench his jaw and say, "And you're surprised by any of this, Griff?" "Yes," Griff said, turning on him. "Programming is one thing. This is something else. At least we knew the blasted programming was there." Rift was still swearing.
"We are bought and paid for," Alpha said. "If someone else paid the Kaminoans to slip a little something extra in."
"Well, the Kaminoans aren't Naboo. What do they care as long as they get paid?"
After what had apparently been considerable debate between Queen Amidala and her advisors, the Queen had finally prevailed, and the decision had been made to inform the highest-ranking clone officers in the system. Rex didn't know the particulars of the argument, but he had been curious to see how these Naboo clones would take the news. His own brothers would have been furious, but resigned. These clones were just furious. Rift spun around and slammed his fist into the nearest wall, making Griffin flinch and Lady Mothier jump, her hand falling briefly to her blaster grip. Alpha glared at him, his expression suggesting that he felt personally insulted by Rift's lack of control. Rex couldn't blame him. Alpha was from the original batch of clone troopers purchased by Naboo, and had been in most of Naboo's major campaigns before being reassigned back to Earthside. Unlike the two younger clones, he still remembered when the Kaminoans and the trainers the clone labs had hired were more interested in treating the troopers as disposable units rather than as people. Rex suspected the cloners still did so. They did so in his universe. But they were more discreet about it now that the Queen had expressed her displeasure at the concept.
Kamino hadn't had any problem selling troops to the Republic, even after having done business exclusively with Naboo for the past decade.
"Sorry," Rift muttered, seeing Mothier's hand move away from her blaster.
Damn, there's nothing else it could be."
"We're fairly certain at this point," Mothier said. She tucked her hands behind her elaborate twisted wire belt buckle, looking at the floating display. "At this point, we're just waiting for confirmation from Kamino, though I doubt we're going to get it. The only other thing we could do is actually trigger the contingency orders, and we're not entirely sure how to do that."
"And you wouldn't want to,"
Alpha added, nodding. He crossed his arms over his chest, not looking at Rift as the other clone shook out his bruised knuckles. Griffin rubbed his fingers over the place on his forehead where the chip had been removed. Every clone on Naboo and in the home fleet had an identical mark now.
Ironic in a way, Rex thought, since individual marks like scars were one of the easiest ways for regulars to tell clones apart.
Now they were all identically scarred.
"Whatever it does," Griffin said. "I don't want the blasted thing in my head. I've read all Kamino's literature on the clones. We're not supposed to have anything else inside us. Subliminal programming's one thing. Implants? We're not supposed to have any implants. Kamino doesn't like external mods. They go in for genetic tweaks instead."
He looked at the other three clones in the room.
Alpha and Rex just shrugged. Rex had never really been terribly interested in his own manufacture, since it was essentially the same as that of every other clone in the Gar, and he didn't have much of an interest in genetics. Alpha apparently felt the same way. Rift, still looking at his injured hand, said, "I heard they once refused to do any med work on clones that involved replacement limbs. Her Royal Highness pulled the Kaminoans out of CIS med centers 2 years ago because they were too much trouble."
"That's true," Maltier admitted. "That, and we couldn't afford to pay for Kaminoan doctors and equipment and keep buying new clones. The Congress refused to pay unless Naboo signed over the clones to the CIS, and Her Highness refused to do so unless they covered the cost of the clones that had already been purchased, which they refused to do."
Alpha's eyebrows shut up.
"Didn't hear about that."
"It was kept quiet," Maltier said. "The Congress is never going to agree to anything that involves credits or real responsibility anyway." She sighed and ran a hand back through her hair, the beads in her half-dozen tails clicking lightly together at the motion. "Most of them still do business with the banking clan. They would have had to take out loans instead of paying real credits the way we do. Your Highness won't stand for that."
"To blazes with the Congress anyway," Griffin scowled. "We're not droids. Give me the Naboo any day."
Rift folded his fingers distractedly in his long hair and tugged.
"What can we do?"
he asked Maltier.
She shrugged.
"Nothing at the moment. Her Highness doesn't want to make a general announcement until we have something certain. And even then..."
"Mass panic,"
Alpha said.
"For us and everyone else. A lot of the Naboo don't like clones anyway. If something like this comes out, the Queen might have to make some tough decisions."
"Her Highness would be happy to tell the Conservatives to shove it," Maltier said. "But she would rather not have to."
Alpha nodded. "Well, the boys are a little nervous, but we've had worse. The cover story is good."
He glanced at Rift and Griffin.
"My pilots aren't too keen on anyone cruffing around in their heads, but the old man's right. We've had worse," Rift said. "And we trust the Queen."
Maltier looked a little relieved. "Her Highness would have been here herself, but she had a council meeting she couldn't reschedule. The operations on the home fleet clones are proceeding. Then we'll move on to those stationed on the moons and in Naboo forces off-world. Hopefully, by then, we'll have heard from Kamino."
"That'll be interesting," Alpha said.
"It should be very interesting," Maltier said. Her comm link beeped, and she glanced down at it.
"Excuse me, I have to take this." "Of course, my lady."
Maltier stepped aside as Griffin hit a control on the holoprojector to shut the display off.
"I can't believe this, Drek," he said again. "Or, no, I can't believe it. Thank the living stars for Captain Kenobi."
Rex glanced down. Their cover story was that Queen Amidala's Obi-Wan Kenobi and the members of his Special Operations Unit, appropriately just known as The Unit, had discovered the plot against the clones while in the midst of another mission. Since most of Captain Kenobi's off-world missions were so classified that less than a dozen people had clearance to hear about them, it wasn't necessarily a bad cover story. Rex had actually heard worse, though usually the Jedi didn't even bother with cover stories, just returned with the information and expected the clones and their officers to deal with whatever they had discovered.
"I'm sorry, what do you mean Her Royal Highness isn't responding?" Maltier said, frowning.
Her brows were drawn together in confusion.
"Did you try the throne room, or Commander Panaka?"
Alpha glanced over his shoulder at the sound of her voice. The Rift and Griffin looked like they were deliberately ignoring the one-sided conversation.
"Did Congressman Palpatine say why he had to leave immediately?"
"Palpatine." Rex gave up all pretense at ignoring the conversation and turned towards her, feeling a muscle jumping in his jaw. Maltier saw the motion and tensed, though her voice remained calm as she said, "Has his ship already jumped to hyperspace?"
blast. All right, I'm on base now. I'll go to the palace. It might just be the relays again. Even in-system communications have been patchy lately.
She clicked her comm link off and came back over to them.
Excuse me, I'm needed at the palace, she said.
Captain Rex, do you mind?
Whatever she was about to say was swallowed up by the sound of the air raid sirens screaming through the building. Hundreds of ships appeared against the blackness of space. Massive, wedge-shaped star destroyers and attack cruisers, oblong dreadnoughts and star frigates, smaller corvettes and heavy cruisers, and, protected by the capital ships, the assault carriers within whose bellies rested tanks, walkers, gunships, and more importantly, the clone troopers and Jedi Knights waiting to make their assault on the planet's surface. All of them came out of hyperspace in a matter of seconds, blacking out the stars behind them. It was the largest war fleet that the Galactic Republic had fielded since the days of the Old Republic, the last time that the Republic itself had gone to war. Admiral Wilhoff Tarkin watched the Naboo home fleet scramble to respond from the bridge of the Republic flagship Leviathan. All around him, watchstanders called out report on the Naboo home defense systems. A nearby orbital platform, its sensor display reading showing its hasty repair after being damaged in the battle with the Trade Federation, got off a burst of laser fire that splattered uselessly across the shields of the nearest star frigate, before being destroyed by the ship in question. A pair of Naboo N1 Viper starfighters, their purpose this far out from the home fleet unknown, bent over backwards in their haste to get back to the protection of their capital ships, darting amongst the laser fire leveled at them. One fighter got away. The other exploded in a burst of energy that barely blipped on Tarkin's screens. The Republic fleet had come in very close to the planet of Naboo, almost dangerously close. The home fleet, spread out along their usual defensive perimeter, had only a few minutes to respond before the Republic fleet could launch gunships full of clone troopers and Jedi Knights. The assault carriers, bulky and more vulnerable than the smaller gunships, would hang back until the path had been cleared for them. "Launch the targeted orbital bombardment," he ordered, watching as the command was acknowledged. Missiles sped out from the Republic fleet, raining down on Naboo and its occupied moons. It wasn't the kind of bombardment Tarkin would have preferred, but it would reduce the planetary defense grid to manageable levels so that the invasion force could launch. "Incoming ordnance," a watchstander announced. Leviathan's shields lit up in front of the viewport as laser fire and missiles rained down on the fleet, the Naboo home fleet moving predictably to repulse the Republic fleet. Tarkin felt the ship shudder around him from the impact of the shots. On the boards in front of him, he saw damage reports begin to scroll as other ships uploaded their most current status reports to the fleet net.
"No hits," said the watchstander a moment later. "Shields holding at 80%.
Tarkin raised a hand to indicate that he had heard the report, most of his attention on the home fleet. He'd studied the Naboo warships extensively, of course, but this was the first time he had seen them in person. They were certainly impressive. The assessments from Leviathan's sensors showed heavy shielding and numerous guns, even on the smaller escort ships. Although none of the Naboo warships in the home fleet were more than 10 years old, they weren't quite as cutting-edge as the ones in the first and second fleets, a little older and a little slower, before the Naboo engineers had perfected their design. Still formidable, but a far easier target than the newer warships in the first and second fleets. The Battlestar spat out N1 Vipers even as he watched, the sleek yellow and chrome starfighters cutting cleanly through space, dancing through the bursts of laser fire coming from both sides of the conflict. "Launch fighters," Tarkin ordered, and a moment later heard the alert that signified Leviathan's hangar doors opening. Z-95 headhunters and Jedi ether sprites shot past the Star Destroyer's viewport, instantly tangling with the Vipers in a delicate, deadly dance
just outside the engagement envelopes of the two fleets. The Naboo home fleet was very good, but they were outnumbered 2-1 by the Republic fleet. No matter how hard they fought, it was nearly impossible for them to prevail, and they were leaving gaps because they hadn't yet realized the Republic's intent. "Tell the gunships and their fighter escorts to launch," Tarkin ordered. "Assault carriers are to remain back for now." The alert sounded again. Gunships, Jedi Aether Sprites, and Headhunters launched from Leviathan and 2 dozen other capital ships, immediately dipping down beneath the plane of the system to avoid the laser fire being exchanged by the two fleets. Spotting them, the N1s tried to disengage from their dogfight, but they were harried away from the gunships by the Republic starfighters. Too late, the home fleet ships began to switch their targets from the Republic fleet to the gunships. It was easier to watch the events of the battle on the sensor boards than through the viewport, since by now the gunships were very far off. Constantly updated damage reports showed their status. 1 fighter gone, 2 gunships with damage sustained, 1 gunship gone, 1 fighter reporting damage but still operational. As he watched, 1 gunship vanished, its entry on the fleet net replaced by a destroyed tag. The initial landing force was going to make it past the home fleet, despite the Naboo's best attempts. Tarkin had to applaud them. If they had had fewer Republic ships to contend with, if they hadn't taken so much damage during the Federation attack, then the home fleet would have succeeded in repelling the landing force. But the gunships slipped past the home fleet, darting in and out amongst the warships with a lightness that belied their bulk. The gunships were clumsy things, but they did well enough for the purpose for which they had been created, and down towards the planet. More damage reports lit up on his boards, courtesy of Naboo's planetary defense grid. Tarkin glanced at it, then turned his attention back to the space battle. The landing force was no longer his concern. Now the real work began. "Situation report." Lady Mothier rapped out the words as calmly as any Jedi General Rex had ever had the privilege, or the displeasure, of serving, her hands clenched on the side of the holotable. The display on the inhibitor chips had been replaced with an image of Theed and the surrounding areas, miniature anti-aircraft batteries sending bursts of laser fire at the incoming Republic gunships and starfighters. It all felt slightly surreal to Rex. By rights, he should have been on the other side of this battle. The voice that came over her comlink, set to speaker, was a little tinny. "The home fleet has engaged the Republic warfleet. Targeted orbital bombardment has taken out urban shield generators at Theed, Kerin, Dijapik, Parley, and Otagunga. Planetary defense forces have engaged Republic landing forces in those cities." Mothier snapped her fingers at Rift, who was speaking rapidly into his own comlink. He looked up at the sound. She pointed at the door. He nodded and went, still speaking. It sounded like he was telling RNSFC base to get every pilot and starfighter in the air as quickly as possible. Griffin had already left, almost yelling into his comlink as he ran out the doors. Only Alpha still remained, though he was barking orders and questions into his own comlink. All Rex needed for it to feel like home were General Skywalker and General Kenobi joking with each other, but they had gone off-world for some reason he hadn't been privy to. "Do we have Republic forces on the ground anywhere else besides Theed?" At the answer, she swore viciously. "And you still haven't found Captain Panaka? Well, keep trying! I doubt he's sleeping through all this. Crown out." Mothier clicked her comlink off and straightened up, breathing hard. Her gaze flickered to the holodisplay. Then she glanced at Rex and said, "Captain, you're with me. I need to get to the palace and find the Queen." Alpha said, "I'm coming too." Mothier looked like she was considering arguing, then shrugged and said, "Your men know what to do?"
"My men are already doing it, ma'am," Alpha said.
"Good. Come with me. We're going to need bigger guns than what we're carrying right now."
She turned away from the holotable with brisk, certain movements, striding in the direction of the door. Rex and Alpha followed her. Rex running down his mental list of various approaches to this kind of assault. He wasn't paying attention to Mozier until she made a quick gesture, and Alpha slammed Rex up against the nearest wall, forearm pressed against his throat. Mozier stepped up to him, tossing her dark hair back with a jangle of silver beads. "Captain Rex," she said, "I like you a lot. However, if I find that you or your Jedi friends had anything to do with this, I'll cut your throat myself. Do you understand me?" Alpha lessened the pressure on Rex's throat, enough that he could choke out, "Yes, we didn't..." "You'd better not have," Mozier said, and made a sign to Alpha. He let go of Rex, eyeing him suspiciously as Rex took a moment to feel at his throat. "I don't think you did," Mozier added, loosening her blaster in its holster. "Mostly because if you had, he would have timed it better. But I want you to understand the gravity of this situation, Captain."
"Believe me, my lady," Rex said. "I'm aware."
"Good." She swept away from him, stabbing a finger at the door control. Alpha caught Rex's arm as he moved to follow her.
"I don't know what she's talking about," he said. "But if you'd betrayed us..."
"I didn't," Rex snapped.
"I'm watching you," Alpha warned.
"Good. In your shoes, I'd do the same," Rex said, then pulled his arm free and followed Mozier out into the corridor. The atmosphere was chaotic. Rex didn't know the official name of the building they were in, but it was part of the Operations Control Center, and at the moment, it was filled with uniformed RNSF personnel running back and forth, shouting into their comlinks, and carrying heavy weaponry. Lady Mozier navigated her way calmly through the scrum, barking a quick rebuke to anyone who didn't get out of her path quickly enough, and led them to the nearest armory, which she keyed open with one hand on the palm reader.
"Armor up, boys," she said, stepping inside.
So far, no one else had gotten to the small room, if the full shelves were any indication. There were racks of Naboo-style battle armor along one wall, which Rex and Alpha went to immediately.
"What about you, ma'am?"
Alpha asked, pulling pieces of armor off the shelf. There were several sizes, since not every soldier in the RNSF was a clone, but Rex found his own easily enough. It was close enough to his own armor that he could have put it on in his sleep. "I'm not used to the blasted stuff. I'll move faster without it," Mozier said, pulling a shoulder holster off one of the racks and shrugging it on, doing up the straps quickly. She was wearing a sleeveless purple tunic with a split skirt over light-colored leggings on knee-high boots. Rex could tell from the weave that the tunic, at least, was made of energy-absorbing fibers rather than the more delicate fabrics he had seen the handmaidens wear in the palace. It would offer her some protection, though not as much as the two clone troopers' armor. Mozier slid blaster pistols into the underarm holsters, checking the charge on the blaster she had already been wearing, and added a handful of power packs and miniature thermal detonators to the pouches on her belt. She hefted the DC-15 blaster rifle she took off the shelf with easy familiarity, tucking the stock under her arm as she waited impatiently for Rex and Alpha to finish arming. It didn't take long. Rex felt much better once he was back in armor, sliding a pair of blaster pistols home in the holsters. The battle armor wasn't identical to what the Gar used, but it was close enough, and that was what mattered. He did a few experimental stretches to make sure that his mobility wasn't impaired at all, and that nothing pinched or rubbed, then joined Alpha in pulling weapons and equipment off the shelves. By the time they left the armory, other soldiers were beginning to crowd in, making Rex glad they had stripped it of everything they could carry and not be weighed down. A few people, recognizing Mozier, stopped her to ask questions about the attack, but her only response was to tell them to get back to their posts and do their duty. "Nobody's been able to get through to the Queen," she said as they made their way out of the building. She'd switched her wrist comlink for an earcuff. Rex couldn't hear the other half of her conversation, though he'd heard Mozier greet the handmaid Nirte by name when she had answered the call. "No, stay at Glasswater.
I'm on my way to the palace now with an escort, Mortier said in response to whatever the other handmaiden had said. Can we punch through a communication to the First Fleet? The entire Holonet is down? Blast! All right, I'll check in again later. She tapped her ear cuff to end the call and turned back toward the two clones. We're going through the tunnels. This way. Outside, the sound of starfighters zooming by overhead, the repetitive battery of the Naboo anti-aircraft guns, and the shouts of soldiers running to their posts almost drowned out the wail of the air raid sirens. Rex glanced up as they ran across the courtyard, spotting the familiar bellies of Republic headhunters and ether sprites alongside the Naboo N1 Vipers and Starhawks. Ether sprites meant Jedi, he thought, and felt a chill uncoil in the pit of his stomach. It was a hell of a time for General Skywalker and General Kenobi to have taken their vacation. The only good way for a non-Jedi to take down a Jedi was by surprise, overwhelming numbers, or preferably, both. The 501st had learned that firsthand on Umbara. Somewhere in the distance, Rex could hear shooting. He'd seen enough of the city to have a pretty good idea of where the Republic gunships were probably setting down. The defenses on the palace grounds themselves were probably too good for the Republic to get through, but there were several open areas not more than a kilometer away, as well as flat roofs on some of the buildings that a good pilot would be able to land a gunship on long enough to unload troops. Rex knew that the city shields were meant to prevent orbital bombardment, but didn't know how they'd fare against landing troops. Not well, if the blaster fire was any indication. Mothier led them across several courtyards to the part of the base set aside for the RNSFC, stopping occasionally to duck beneath the shelter of the colonnades as starfighters clashed overhead. A nearby explosion made the ground beneath them rock. Rex couldn't see where it had originated from, but it was close enough that it had to be on base. Which made him realize that at least some of the blaster fire had to be coming from the base, too. How in blazes had the Republic been able to land troops close enough to base for that? Unless they'd managed to get a gunship down on one of the airfields. Ma'am, down! Mothier dropped without needing to be told twice, and Alpha fired over her head, dropping a white-armored clone trooper perched on top of a nearby roof. Rex froze in instinctive shock as the trooper fell, staring at the familiar armor and thinking, friendly fire, before he realized that the armor was all wrong. Well, not all wrong. It was GAR armor, not RNSF armor. And Rex belatedly remembered hearing that the Republic had purchased the most recent batch of clone troopers from Kamino. The batch of clone troopers that had been supposed to come to Naboo. Brothers fighting brothers. That never ended well. Alpha thumped a fist into his shoulder. Not one of ours, he said, as Mothier straightened back to her feet. Don't freeze up, brother. Rex had put a blaster bolt in Cody's head. Nothing could be worse than that had been. And these clones might be his brothers, but they were strangers to him. They might be Republic clones, but it wasn't his Republic, and they were trying to kill his friends. If he could kill Cody, then he could do this. No, he said. I won't freeze again. Sorry. Stop delaying, Mothier snapped, moving forwards again with her DC-15 raised. If they're on base, then they could be in the palace, too. Come on. Muted thumps on either side of the gunship marked the Naboo's anti-aircraft defenses, sending the gunship rocking from side to side as the clone pilots stirred them through the flak. Jedi Knight Stas Alley clutched at the hand grip above her, swaying with the motion to keep her footing and wishing vaguely for a Jedi pilot at the controls instead. She had spent most of her adult life being flown around by civilians, but that didn't mean she wouldn't prefer someone Force-sensitive who could steer a way through this mess. There were Jedi starfighters flying escort for them, along with clone headhunters, but there was no point in putting a Jedi in the cockpit of a gunship where they wouldn't be much use.
1 minute.
The pilot announced over the gunship's internal comm system. The announcement nearly lost in the roar of the gunship's engines, the scream of the anti-aircraft defenses, and the rat-tat of the Republic guns on the gunship and from their starfighter escort. 1 minute, Stas echoed, holding up one finger in case the clones couldn't hear her. She clutched at the hand grip as the gunship banked sharply to one side, hearing cursing over her comlink, which was set to the command frequency. The 1 minute warning was repeated across the other gunships headed for their particular drop zone. 6 Jedi and over 100 clones packed into a dozen LA-80s. As she clung to the hand grip, trying to keep her feet as the gunship wove in and out of the Naboo planetary defense screen, Stas wished that she had a viewport to look out of, because even one small window would have given her a welcome view of the battle outside. She could have toggled to a different frequency on her comlink to check in on the space battle or the other landing forces, but they were all involved in doing their jobs, just as she was doing hers.
20 seconds to drop. Opening doors.
The doors on either side of the gunship slid open, letting in a blast of hot summer air and the sound of laser fire. Peering out, Stas saw the round domes and bright gardens of the Theed Royal Palace growing closer. The doll-like figures of armored men and women ran through the streets of the city beneath them, flashes of light marking blaster fire. Naboo N1 Vipers, Jedi Aether Sprites, and Clone Headhunters streaked past, close enough that Stas was nearly deafened. As she watched, an Aether Sprite took out one of the civil defense towers before exploding in a burst of flame and burning metal. Stas winced, feeling the Jedi pilot wink out of the Force.
We're in place, General Ellie.
The gunship was hovering over the round dome of the Queen's Hall, jinking and jerking occasionally to avoid anti-aircraft fire. Bunker busters, Stas ordered, and a pair of clones leaned out to drop the heavy explosives over the side of the gunship. The gunship swayed again under the force of the explosion, Stas doing her best to steady it with the Force. A second set of nearby explosions marked Agen Kolar's team doing the same. Follow me, Stas said, and leapt out of the gunship, snatching her lightsaber from her belt as she did so. She spread her arms and legs to catch the air currents, slowing her descent. The clones were fast roping down, then twisted to land in a crouch on the shattered remains of what had previously been the building's ceiling, igniting her lightsaber out to one side. She was already beating back blaster bolts from the Naboo Palace Guard as the clones landed alongside her, firing the instant they hit the floor. Stas ran forward once all the clones were on the ground with her, her lightsaber sweeping out from side to side to repel blaster bolts. There weren't as many defenders in the palace as they had been warned to expect. Most of them were probably out in the streets or at the complex's more conventional entry points. Over her comlink, she heard the other Jedi leading the palace assault teams begin to check in, marking their infiltration of the building. Only she and Agen Kolar were bound for the throne room. The others were headed elsewhere, all of them hoping to cut off the queen from escape. Protocol was for Amidala to remain in the palace as long as possible. Stas hoped that their intelligence was good, and that still held true. Agen and his squadron joined them in the antechamber to a long hallway that would probably be quite glorious under normal circumstances. As it was, half the stained glass windows in the corridor had shattered under the bombardment, so that as they ran, it crunched beneath their booted feet. They were almost at the end of the corridor when blaster fire rained down on them, dropping the 2 clone troopers who had been unlucky enough to run headfirst into the crossfire. Back, Agen ordered, as he and Stas pushed to the front, their lightsabers flashing as they batted away blaster bolts.
We'll handle this.
There weren't many of them, Stas sensed. Just a small group of defenders left to hold the throne room against all threats. She pulled a stun grenade off her belt, nodding at Agen as they did the same thing, and in unison they tossed the 2 grenades forward, propelling them around the corridor's corners with the Force. Muffled thumps signaled their detonation. When no further blaster fire followed, Stas and Agen went cautiously forward to check, and about half a dozen men and women in RNSF uniforms sprawled on the floor.
We can finish this, said Stas's clone captain, drawing one of his hand blasters.
She held out a hand to stop him. No, she said. No unnecessary deaths.
The Naboo aren't our enemies, they're just misled.
They'll make more trouble for us later on, he said,
but holstered his blaster again without more protest. From here, the massive closed doors of the throne room were visible. Half a dozen clones advanced first, cautious in case of a trap laid in the shelter created by the massive columns flanking the corridor. But no more blaster fire rang out. One of the clones knelt down in front of the charred-looking control panel for the door, inspecting it, and then shook his head.
Circuits are fused, General. I can't tell if it was done deliberately or if it was done by accident.
He straightened up, looking at the doors critically.
We can blow it, I guess, or get some laser cutters in here, but it might take a while.
That won't be necessary, Stas said, with a quick nod to Agen. Without bothering to speak further, they both plunged their lightsabers into the doors, the layers of metal slowing their progress as they steadily carved an opening large enough for the armored troopers to climb through. There was a rough moment where she thought they had hit a layer of kurtosis, which would have shorted out their lightsabers for anywhere from a few minutes to a few hours, but it turned out to be just a layer of heavier metals. Apparently, Queen Amidala's notorious paranoia hadn't extended that far.
The smell hit her first.
Stas ducked through the opening as soon as she and Agen could pull the large circle of metal out of the way, dropping lightly to the marble floor and straightening up with her lightsaber ignited. She deactivated it as she looked around the room, staring at the sight that met her eyes.
Oh, sting! The room was filled with corpses. Loading,
Rex barked, dropping to one knee to eject the spent power pack and slap a new one into his dice. Alpha and Mothia took up the slack created by his moment of inaction. Then Rex raised his rifle and started firing again, covering Alpha as the other clone tapped his shoulder and ran forward. Mothia did the same. Rex waited until they were at the next position and ready to cover him before he straightened up and followed them, keeping his head tucked down as he ran. They were in one of the starfighter hangars, one of the older ones if Rex's vague conception of Naboo decor was anywhere near accurate. It was already occupied by Republic troops, though not much more than a squad. There was considerably less than a squad left now. Rex fired when he saw an opening, a white-armored Republic trooper falling to the floor as the bolt took him through the heart. Behind him, Mothia said, "Cover me," and popped out from behind the cover of a damaged starfighter, her arm coming back before she slung the grenade at a knot of remaining troopers. The resulting explosion made the hangar's rafters shake. Mothia had dropped the moment she threw the grenade, coming up cautiously in a crouch as Rex and Alpha moved forward to make sure that no more Republic clones remained.
Clear. Clear.
Alpha, watch the door. Rex, I need another pair of hands. Mothia strode calmly forward, swinging her DC-15 to dangle across her back. Help you roll the starfighter forward? Rex went over to help her. The starfighter in question was jacked up as though set aside for repair. Between the two of them, they were able to roll it forward, revealing a stretch of blank wall. Rex said, looking at it. Wait for it, Mothia said, resting her palm on the wall itself. She stepped back as a section of the wall slid aside, revealing a dark tunnel beyond. Alpha. The other clone backed towards them, his gaze fixed watchfully on the entrance to the hangar until he entered the passageway. Mothia hit a control panel just inside, and the door slid shut, Lumas in the corridor igniting only after the lock had engaged. That's DNA coded to certain members of the royal household, she said. Unless they blow the door, and they'd have to know it's here to do that. The reps won't be able to get in. Alpha, take point. This goes directly to the Queen's Hall. Rex, you're on our six. The three of them ran down the long corridor, more Lumas coming on as they passed. Rex glanced warily over his shoulder as they ran, but so far it looked like Mothia was right, and they weren't being followed. Down here, the laser fire of the anti-aircraft batteries and the starfighters was muffled.
The blaster fire being exchanged by ground troops on both sides wasn't audible at all. It was weirdly peaceful. Motia raised one hand to tap her ear cuff, then scowled. "Comms are blocked down here," she said, apropos of nothing. "They won't be cleared again until we're out." Neither clone responded. There wasn't anything to say. A few minutes later, Alpha called. "Ma'am, we've got a door. Cover me." Motier and Rex both swung their blasters up as he hit the control to open it. Apparently, there were no DNA tests necessary to get out. "Clear," Motier said a moment later. She and Alpha emerged into a white marbled corridor, Rex following them. Motier tapped a control, and the door slid invisibly closed. Blaster fire rang out nearby, though not so close that Rex looked around for the source. Motier tapped her ear cuff. "Sabe, it's me," she said. When there was no reply, she frowned and tapped her cuff again. "Dorme?" "Hale." "Tekla." "Commander Panaka." Silence followed each attempted transmission. Motier swore softly, then said, "We'll start with the throne room. The Royal Advisory Council should have been meeting there, and it's the first place the Republic will look." "What if Her Highness isn't there?" Alpha asked. "We'll burn that bridge when we come to it. Both of you on me." The three of them ran quickly and silently down the scarred and burn-marked corridors of the Queen's Hall. It was obvious there had been fighting here. Naboo Palace guards, RNSF soldiers, and Republic clone troopers lay sprawled at odd intervals, sightless eyes staring up at the ceiling. Blaster fire echoed through the corridors, explosions rattling the old building. Passing one tall window, Rex saw a headhunter go screaming past, trailing smoke before it crashed into one of the palace gardens. Despite all this, by some miracle, they didn't run into any more Republic troops until they were nearly at the doors to the throne room. Motier held up a closed fist to bring them to a stop, pulling a small mirror out of her tunic to look around the corner. She held up two fingers, then made a complicated series of hand gestures that culminated in her slashing the side of her hand across her throat, her meaning clear. Rex and Alpha nodded, both of them switching from the rifles to their pistols and setting them to stun. It wasn't quite silent, but it was pretty damn close, and the sound of blaster fire in the distance ought to confuse the matter. It wasn't exactly an elegant plan, but without a handy Jedi, it was the best they could do. Mose hefted her blaster rifle. Then, in near unison, Rex and Alpha stepped out into the open where they had a clear shot, dropping the two clones with a double tap of sunblasts. They went down without a sound. Rex flicked the stun setting off immediately, waiting for more clones to pour out of the hole that had been cut in the throne room doors, but there was no response. The hole had obviously been cut by a lightsaber. Rex had seen enough of those over the past few years to know that kind of damage when he saw it. From inside the throne room, he could hear at least two unfamiliar voices, a woman's and a man's. Jedi, probably. He had had a wider experience of Jedi than most clone troopers, but he only knew a couple well enough to recognize them by voice, and these weren't his generals or Commander Tano. Motier listened for a moment, frowning, then murmured, "I need to get in there. I need a distraction." "This wasn't us," Agen said out loud. Kneeling down by the body of a man Stas recognized as Korsh Panaka, the commander of the Royal Naboo Security Forces. Blaster bolts riddled his face and body. His own blaster had fallen from his hand and lay on the floor beside him. All around them were the dead bodies of the Naboo Royal Advisory Council, the Queen's handmaidens, members of the Palace Guard, and battle-armored RNSF soldiers. The presence of the latter, who wouldn't customarily stand in honor guard at the Queen's Council meetings, nagged at Stas's mind. But she couldn't quite put a finger on what felt off about it. There had clearly been blaster fire exchanged between at least two parties,
But the damage done was at least a few hours old. Long enough that the bodies had begun to smell in the summer heat, flies beginning to gather. Stas urged them away at the twist of the Force, wanting to give the dead at least this little dignity. "General Alley? General Kolar?" one of their own clone troopers called. He was standing beside the throne, looking down at something.
"I think you should see this."
Stas glanced at Agen, reading his thoughts on his face as clearly as if she had dipped into the Force to touch his mind. "What next?" They straightened up and went over to join the clone who had spoken, stepping with delicate precision around the scattered bodies of the dead. Stas saw guardsmen with their blasters fallen from their hands, handmaidens with their necks broken, ministers who had probably never lifted a weapon in all their lives lying dead on the marble floor. All dead. All dead, hours before the Republic fleet had even entered the system. She went around the Queen's big desk, and couldn't keep herself from clasping a hand to her mouth to cover her gasp. Beside her, Agen swore softly. On the floor in front of them, half under the cover of the desk, was Queen Amidala of Naboo. Or part of her, anyway. She had been bisected at the waist, her legs going one way, her torso another. One small hand lay a little ways away, fingers still clutching a holdout blaster. Her headdress was dragged half off her head, revealing a tumble of brown curls. She stared sightlessly up at the ceiling, pain and shock written on her delicate features. It wasn't the worst murder Stas had ever seen, but it definitely made the top five. "Agen," she said quietly, "that was done by a lightsaber."
"Kenobi?"
Agen said automatically, kneeling down by the Queen's body, then shook his head. "No, of course not. He is in custody and has been for weeks, and whatever else he is, I put my money on the fact that he loves Amidala. Luminara or Eeth wouldn't do this, but who..." Stas reached into the Force, feeling through the threads of it that ran through the room. There should have been residue of some sort, a psychic stain that might give them some hint at who, or what, had done this. Darkness lipped at the surface of Stas's mind, and she jerked back as if she had been slapped, almost thrown out of the Force. "Stas!" Agen, on his feet again, caught at her elbows. She felt his presence thread its way through her distress, soothing out the rough edges caused by her discovery.
"What is it? What did you see?"
"Obi-Wan was right," Stas gasped, which was unexpected enough that she felt Agen's surprise echo in the Force. "The Sith are back."
"What?"
"It splashed all over this room. Can't you feel it?" Agen's gaze went unfocused for a moment. Then he flinched as he sensed what Stas had.
"By the Force."
He looked down at the Queen's body again.
"But who? How? Why?"
"All good questions." Stas knelt down by the Queen, reaching out to close her painted eyelids with one hand. Then stopped, staring at the woman's face. She had watched all of Amidala's broadcasts. The woman might be a fanatic and a traitor, but she wasn't wrong about everything, and Jedi or not, Stas could admire the strength of her convictions.
"Stas?"
She slipped her comlink with its bio-upload off her belt, reaching down with a mental apology to touch it to one of the Queen's fingers. There was blood under the nails, Stas noted, with a little bit of clinical detachment. She doubted there would be a match for it, but it was something to check.
"What are you doing?"
Agen asked, as they waited for the fingerprint and skin fragments to upload to the Jedi database. There was a pause as one of the other Jedi Knights back in the fleet acknowledged receipt and ran it through their records. "Look at her eyebrows," Stas said.
Egan gave her a blank look. Being a Zabrak, he didn't have any. Stas rolled her eyes. Men, they're the wrong shape. Egan drew in a breath of understanding, just as the comlink beeped. Stas looked down at the result, torn between relief and disappointment, because everything had suddenly gotten much more complicated. It isn't her. A decoy, Egan said. They'd known this was a risk when they were planning the invasion. He looked at Stas across the dead woman's body. Then where is the queen? There was an explosion outside the room, followed by a burst of blaster fire far too close. Egan's head jerked up at the sound. The clone trooper is standing uneasily by the door, looking around. Go, Stas told him. I'll stay with the dead. Egan nodded and went, igniting his lightsaber before he left the room. Stas stayed kneeling beside the dead woman, trying to remember the names of Queen Amidala's handmaidens. There were so many of them, though not all of them acted as decoys for her when need be. The identity of those who did was a tightly kept secret by the Crown of Naboo. Half her attention on the sound of the fighting outside, Stas leaned down and closed the woman's eyes, wishing there was some way to arrange her skirts to give her a little dignity in death, but the means of her murder had pretty much made that impossible. The handmaiden beside her lay with her head at an unnatural angle, though there was no mark on her. Stas could feel the ugly residue of the dark side sunk into her skin and knew that she had died from the Force. The same was true for the handmaiden crumpled against the wall behind the throne, her garments scorched from lightning. She hadn't spoken to Obi-Wan Kenobi since he left the Order 12 years earlier, but every Jedi knew what he had told the Council, even if they didn't know the exact words. The Sith are back. They want their revenge. We have to hunt them before they hunt us. She knew that the Council had dismissed him as paranoid, an impression not aided by the fact that he had resigned the Order almost immediately afterwards. They hadn't begun to take him seriously until years later, for reasons Stas hadn't been privy to at the time. Obi-Wan was right, she thought. And while we had him locked up in the Jedi Temple, someone came here meaning to do this to the woman he loves. Stas jerked to her feet, her lightsaber igniting in a streak of green plasma. The woman who had just climbed through the hole in the door froze, looking at Stas down the barrel of the slim ELG-3A blaster pistol in her hand. Jedi. Handmaiden, Stas returned, coming out from around the side of the desk. The other woman moved warily away from the doors, putting her back to the wall. Her gaze never left Stas, even though she stepped unerringly around the body of the Minister of Education, her heel treading very slightly on the woman's blood-stained sleeve. Her free hand brushed against the butt of the rifle slung across her back, as if considering switching weapons. Stas couldn't remember the handmaiden's name, but she was a Jedi Knight. She never forgot a face, and she remembered seeing her in the background of one of Queen Amidala's broadcasts. Drop your weapons. The handmaiden raised her eyebrows. No, she said. After a moment, her gaze flickered quickly around the room, and she added, Did you do this, Jedi? No. In the back of her mind, Stas was aware of Egan and the Force, presumably chasing down whatever the handmaiden had used as a distraction to lure the clone troopers out of the room. We came here to arrest Queen Amidala, not kill her. The woman's breath caught for an instant. Stas could feel her mind in the Force, sharp as a whip and working furiously through the implications. I don't believe you, she said. Everyone in this room was dead for hours before we arrived, Stas said. The handmaiden's gaze flicked aside again. She looked around the room, studying the carnage with a practiced eye that made Stas wonder just how many corpses she had seen.
She was a cool one, Stas thought. Her friends were almost certainly among the dead.
The queen, she said at last. Stas hesitated for an instant, then gave in to the faint whisper of the Force and deactivated her lightsaber, holding up the hilt so that the handmaiden could see it.
Come here, she said. Why should I trust you?
I'm a Jedi Knight, Stas said.
The woman tossed her hair back, the beads in it jangling softly.
I think Obi-Wan Kenobi would have a few things to say about the trustworthiness of the Jedi, she said.
Stas leaned over and set her lightsaber down on the queen's desk, knowing that it would only take her an extra second or so to reach it if it came to that.
You can keep your weapons, she said. Just come here, please. You haven't seen everything in this room yet.
The handmaiden took a deep breath, bracing herself, then shifted to a double-handed grip on her blaster and made her way over to Stas, standing well back from her.
What? She asked. What else do you want to...
Oh, ancestors!
She put one hand to her mouth, looking sick at the sight of the mutilated body on the floor in front of the throne. Without holstering her pistol, she moved around Stas to crouch down beside the dead woman's torso, starting to reach out before she stopped.
Is Queen Amidala even on world? Stas asked quietly.
This was done by a lightsaber, the handmaiden said instead of answering. She straightened up, pointing her blaster at Stas.
Stas didn't flinch. I was hoping you knew whose.
I thought hunting Darksiders was your job, Jedi.
What do you know about Darksiders? Stas asked, narrowing her eyes.
Most people outside the Order weren't familiar with the term.
Obi-Wan Kenobi is married to my queen, said the handmaiden, her voice light and dry.
I hear things.
But not, Stas said. Who might have done this?
For a moment, there was so much hatred in the Force that Stas almost staggered under the weight of it, under the woman's bitterness and grief, her burning anger. If she had been Force-sensitive, the room would have been on fire.
Even if I did know something, Jedi, she said, why would I tell you?
She was telling the truth. She didn't know anything.
Stas glanced aside, but there was nowhere to look without seeing the dead.
Outside, there was fighting in the streets, starfighters engaged in a deadly dance over the planet's surface, and even further afield, the home fleet was throwing itself hopelessly against the might of the Republic fleet. But here, the battle had already been fought and lost, hours before the Republic forces had even come out of hyperspace.
Is Queen Amidala even on world? She asked again.
She saw the handmaiden square her shoulders, clearly hesitating over answering.
Finally, the other woman replied. Do the Jedi have Obi-Wan Kenobi?
When Stas didn't respond, the handmaiden tilted her head to one side, lowering her blaster slightly.
I'll answer your question if you answer mine, she said.
Stas raised her eyebrows, weighing the options, and finally said, Captain Kenobi is standing trial for crimes against the Force.
On Coruscant?
Yes.
For a moment, she thought that the handmaiden wasn't going to answer. Then she said, Her Royal Highness went off-world yesterday.
Where?
It's a big galaxy, Jedi, said the handmaiden, her mouth set stubbornly. I won't compromise her safety, not to the Jedi. I know what you'd do with that information.
I understand, Stas allowed. Eeth Koth and Luminara Unduli?
Her Royal Highness took them with her, said the handmaiden.
Stas blinked.
There were teams searching the palace for them, but she had thought...
Why? Why do you think, Jedi? You took Her Highness's husband. Stas sighed, understanding. The High Council won't trade Captain Kenobi for Master Koth and Master Unduli. The Order doesn't bargain. The handmaiden shrugged. The Order's never had to deal directly with Queen Amidala before. She had a point, Stas had to admit. As far as she knew, Amidala hadn't interacted personally with the Jedi High Council since the end of the occupation 12 years ago. And since Stas herself had still been a Padawan at the time, she didn't know any of the details. It couldn't have been much more than a few formalities, though. Amidala had thrown them off the planet before they could do more than that. The Order won't negotiate, Stas said again. Especially not for Obi-Wan Kenobi. Then they'll regret it, said the handmaiden. She looked down at the decoy's dead body again, her mouth settling into a thin line. Stas could feel her grief leeching into the Force, a chill of fierce, ugly determination settling over her. After a moment, she raised her gaze to meet Stas's eyes. What now, Jedi? Are you going to kill me? Or take me into... She sneered delicately. Custody? Stas could feel Aegon's presence in the Force, circling slowly back around in the direction of the throne room. She didn't know if the handmaiden's accomplices had been captured or not, but from his frustration, she suspected that they had managed to escape. Naboo has fallen, m'lady, she said. It would be better for you to give yourself up. The Jedi will see that you're treated fairly by the Republic under the circumstances. Surrender, said the handmaiden immediately. I don't think so. Amidala will never be Queen of Naboo again. This system is now under the rule of the Galactic Republic. The woman grinned without any humor, her teeth white against her tan skin. We've heard that before. Naboo will endure. We always do. We suffered the Trade Federation, and we will suffer the Galactic Republic. And we will endure. I think the Republic will not find Naboo any more hospitable than the Federation did. Do you think that's true? I know it to be. Queen Amidala cannot win this war. By fighting it at all, the Republic has already lost, said the handmaiden. You underestimate my Queen Jedi. Stas's comlink crackled, Aegon's voice echoing through the room as he reported that he and his clone troopers were on their way back. Stas saw the handmaiden tense, though there was no fear in her clear brown eyes. Go, Stas said, before she could change her mind. What? If you go now, you won't be here when Master Kolar and the others come back. So go. The handmaiden took one step in the direction of the door, then paused. Why? Stas took a deep breath. Because Padme Amidala of Naboo wasn't wrong, she said. The Republic is broken, maybe beyond all repair. The handmaiden stared at her for a few precious moments, then nodded once before hastening out the way she had come. Stas stared after her, reaching down to pick up her lightsaber hilt again. May the Force be with you, she murmured, then looked down at the remains of the body that should have been Queen Amidala's. Had the Jedi let this happen? If they had listened to Obi-Wan Kenobi 12 years ago, would the Sith still be running free in the galaxy? Was the Order as broken as the Republic itself? Cracks running through it that were only now beginning to reveal themselves? Obi-Wan's arrest and trial. The lies the High Council was telling to the Supreme Chancellor. The invasion itself. The Jedi were meant to be peacekeepers, not soldiers. May the Force be with us all, Stas said out loud. She thought they were going to need it. Lady Mortier rendezvoused with them in the shelter of a room that was probably quite peaceful under normal circumstances. But, at the moment, the dead body of a Naboo guardsman was headfirst in the fountain, staining the water red with blood. "Her Highness?" Alpha asked, as Mortier hit the door control, locking it behind her. "Her Highness is off-world. Her decoy and the Council are dead. Captain Panaka, too." Mortier wiped sweat off her forehead, apparently not noticing the two clones staring at her. "We need to get to the Palace Security Center. I need to pull the holochem coverage of the throne room."
"The Council's dead!"
"Slaughtered before the Republic even arrived."
"And Her Highness
left yesterday."
"With my generals and the Senator,"
Rex checked, sudden understanding flooding through him. Mortier nodded, her expression faintly distracted. "I won't tell you where. If we get separated, it's better that you not know."
"You've known this the entire time."
Rex couldn't decide if he was angry or not,
given that he had been dragged into a war zone to find a woman whom Mortier had known all along wasn't here. Though, in her defense, the entire system seemed to be a war zone at the moment.
"Yes."
She studied him with cool brown eyes. "You can either come with me, or you can try your luck with the Republic. I don't care which option you choose."
Alpha, crouched by the side of the fountain, with his gaze fixed on the door, didn't look back, but Rex could tell by the set of his shoulders that he was listening to the exchange. If Rex tried to leave, then Alpha would put a blaster bolt between his eyes.
"I'll come with you," Rex said. "You got us this far, ma'am."
"Good." Mortier tapped her earcuff.
"Irte,
it's me.
Fever season.
Repeat, fever season. The storm's coming and the floodwaters are rising, so bolt the doors and make for high ground." He could just barely make out the other woman's reply.
"Are you sure?"
"You've got a better view than I do. Is there any hope at all?" There was a long pause.
"No,"
Irte finally replied.
"We're setting the charges in Glasswater House now."
"Then we'll see you at the rally point," Mortier said, and clicked her earcuff off.
"What does that mean?"
Rex asked.
"It means we lost the battle," Mortier said. "But the war is just starting."
Starships fought and died across an unthinkably huge battlefield, light minutes in size from end to end. Debris already littered the space where the two fleets had met and mingled, escape pods jettisoned from destroyed ships propelled on long arcs down toward the planet or the inhabited moons. Bursts of energy marked the spots where missiles got through the rapidly wearying shields of warships and starfighters alike, so that the entirety of space visible through Leviathan's viewport was lit up like the Coruscant skyline. The Naboo home fleet was losing the battle, but they seemed determined to take as many Republic warships with them as possible. Leviathan herself shivered as one of the two remaining Battlestars got a lucky strike that slid past the Star Destroyer's weakened flank shields. Somewhere on the bridge, an alarm began to sound. A watchstender called, "Fire in Section 89D, blast doors closing in 3, 2, blast doors closed." There was nothing critical in 89D, Tarkin remembered. Just crew quarters, and no one would be there in the middle of a battle. Most of the home fleet's battle cruisers were gone, pushing the battle stars to the fore of the fight in order to take their places. Smaller escort ships darted around the massive starfighter carriers, clawing out a place in the fight alongside the big warships. One battle star had already been destroyed. What was left of its hull drifted at an odd angle away from the battlefield. It had gone down hard, taking two Star Destroyers with it. The first with its guns, the second by driving the Battlestar directly into the nearest Star Destroyer after the ship had been too badly damaged to continue the fight. As Tarkin watched, the shields on one of the two remaining Battlestars began to flicker under the repeated blaster fire. Another Naboo-like cruiser exploded in a burst of energy, catching a pair of Z-95s in the blast zone. The home fleet couldn't take much more of this. On the ground, the battle would probably last for days, even weeks or months to come, once the initial assault had been made and the cities had been taken. The Trade Federation had learned that to its sorrow. Tarkin had studied the Naboo, fascinated by the unlikelihood of this small, remote world daring to defy one of the greatest powers in the galaxy a decade earlier. He had seen the danger that Amidala posed years before anyone else had, read the sharp intelligence in her eyes and the fanatic's fervor in her voice. He had known that good men and women would die because of that girl, had known that the Republic itself might crumble because of that child's pride. It would have been better for the Republic if they had merely bombarded Naboo into scorched earth from orbit, but the Supreme Chancellor had not been amenable to the suggestion. Dooku wanted Amidala of Naboo alive. Newt Gunray of the Trade Federation had wanted Amidala of Naboo alive, too. And look where that had gotten him. "Admiral," called the intelligence watchstander. "We've intercepted an encrypted transmission for the planet to the Naboo flagship." "And?" Tarkin said, frowning at the woman. "We already had the decryption key, sir. I think you'll want to see this." The Royal Naboo Space Navy ship Constellation shuddered under the force of repeated impacts. Admiral Emil Agathon caught herself on the edge of the holotable in front of her, though not fast enough to keep her head from banging into it as the Battlestar jerked again. Pain made Emil hiss, blood running down her face from the gash and spreading across the display as Emil straightened up, wiping a hand across her forehead to keep it out of her eyes. Even as she checked the sensor boards above the holotable, she saw two more starfighters and a heavy cruiser blink off the display, the symbol that indicated their destruction appearing next to their names as the fleet net registered their absence. Kaede Lestari, captain of Constellation, was turned away from the display, shouting something about the aft rail guns as she clutched her broken arm against her body. The medic assigned to the Combat Information Center, the Constellation didn't have a proper bridge the way a Republic Star Destroyer would, had given up trying to get her to do something about it, and was crouching beside one of the communications technicians, who had been badly burned when her console had exploded. "Not long now," Emil thought. Constellation couldn't take much more of this. Her prizel was already gone. From the damage Indefatigable was reporting to the FleetNet, the other Battlestar wouldn't last much longer either. Emil had long since stopped giving fleet orders, because a superior number of Republic ships had turned the earlier fleet maneuvers into nothing more than a straightforward slogging fight whose outcome was already certain. There was no question that the home fleet would lose this battle. Every being in the fleet knew that now. All that mattered was how many Republic ships they could take with them to the grave. "Implicable, swing starboard," she said into her comlink. "Implicable, blast it, swing starboard now! You're about to take heavy fire from that... Pika!" Her shout went unheard, as on the sensor board the heavy cruiser vanished under the sustained fire of a Republic star cruiser, taking her entire crew with her. Emil slammed her fist into the holotable. No one on the CIC even looked up. Another one of Emil's friends gone, and a crew of hundreds with her. Hardly the worst of the losses Naboo had taken today. On the boards, a single N1 Viper went screaming past, hotly pursued by a pair of Z95 headhunters. Emil glanced at it, but there were still dozens of Vipers out there, the starfighters having suffered a slightly lower casualty rate than the warships. She'd been a fighter jock herself once, right when Naboo had started to militarize, and knew that the Vipers didn't need any advice from her. Not that she could have given them any in a situation like this. One of the Republic Star Destroyers vanished from the boards to a muted cheer from the crewmen that could spare the attention to watch them. But Emil didn't cheer. One of their three remaining battlecruisers had collided with the Star Destroyer, either deliberately or by accident in the chaos of the battle. Repulsa's captain had been a good ship driver. He wouldn't have done that by accident, ancestors. No, she was right. The bright dots of Repulsa's escape pods were already showing up on the boards. The captain had made sure that his surviving crew had evacuated before ramming his already ruined ship into the Star Destroyer. Constellation shuddered again as the sensor boards briefly overloaded with the energy pulse of a fresh hit. Emil clutched at the holotable with both hands, feeling blood running hot down the side of her face where she had gashed it open earlier, and tried not to listen to the damage reports being shouted across the CIC. Constellation was Kay de Lestari's ship, not hers. Emil's concern was what remained of the home fleet. That was less than a dozen ships now, and all of them had suffered heavy damage. "Do we have a lock on the Republic flagship yet?" "Not yet, Admiral." Emil breathed out, her gaze on the holodisplay in front of her. "Inspire, turn up 2 degrees to cover dependable. Her port shields are down." Both ships acknowledged the order, the heavy cruiser sliding past in the displays to take the brunt of a battery that would have blown the destroyer to shreds. Emil grimaced, watching, but Inspire could take the damage. Dependable couldn't. "Admiral Agathon, we're receiving a transmission from the planet, Priority Alpha." Emil actually stopped breathing for a moment, but somehow her voice sounded calm even to her own ears, as she said, "Put it through." The image of the battle vanished from the holotable in front of her, replaced by the figure of a slim, blonde woman a few years younger than Emil. She had a blaster in one hand, and in the distance, Emil could hear the sound of muffled explosions. "Irte, what in blazes is going on down there?" Emil demanded. The Queen's handmaiden didn't hesitate.
"Fever season," she said.
Constellation shook again. On the second level of the CIC, there was a shout of, "Fire!" and then the sound of fire suppressant being sprayed. Emil glanced up automatically to see the white foam covering a console and a crewman pulling a tech aside as he beat flames out of her uniform.
"Emil,"
Irte insisted.
"Fever season. I repeat, fever season."
"I heard you," Emil snapped. "What do you expect me to do about it?" Even through the hologram, Irte's expression was very calm.
"The storm's coming and the floodwaters are rising. So bolt the doors and run to high ground."
"Do you have any idea what you're asking me to do?" Emil demanded, her grip white-knuckled on the holotable. "Not all of my ships are hyperdrive capable anymore. I've got thousands of crewmen out here in escape pods. We don't have time to recover."
"Someone has to tell,"
Irte said.
"I'm transmitting the coordinates to you now."
Emil glanced at the communications watchstander, who raised a hand to acknowledge receipt of the transmission. "Irte!"
"The palace and RNSF Theed City have fallen. We're about to blow Glasswater House. Emil, you have to do it."
"Damn you, Irte," Emil said bitterly. But before the handmaiden could respond, added, "I'll do it." She leaned back from the table and ordered, "Get all the starfighters back on board now. Transmit the coordinates we just received to all remaining ships in the fleet and prepare to jump to hyperspace on my signal." Captain Lestari, who hadn't been listening to the conversation, swung around to stare at her. Her eyes were wide with shock and horror. "What are you doing?" "Incoming transmission from Indefatigable." Commodore Yafan de Loca's image appeared on the holotable beside Irte's.
"What?"
"Fever season," Emil said. "The floodwaters are rising." She didn't bother with the rest of the code phrase. Yafan, they knew what that meant. The Commodore's eyes went wide. She swallowed, then said, her voice wavering a little,
"Indefatigable is no longer hyperdrive capable. I'll send our starfighters to Constellation while Indy, Inspire, and Superb cover the fleet's retreat. Both their hyperdrives are too badly damaged to make the jump to hyperspace."
"Ifande!" There weren't words for this in Basic, and Emil switched to the old, ceremonial Naboo tongue. Whether Ifande understood her or not was immaterial. It was the sentiment that mattered. "May the light of the living stars shine down upon you, and the arms of your ancestors welcome you into the Summerlands."
Commodore Loka snapped a sharp salute.
"Take care of my fighters, Eno. Give my regards to the Queen."
Her image vanished abruptly. "Tell the fighter bays to expect Indy starfighters," Lestari ordered, clearly shaken but unable to countermand the order. "How long until all wings are on board?"
2 minutes, Captain."
Emil and Lestari both glanced up at the boards. Do they even have 2 minutes? "Incoming transmissions from dependable, opportune, majestic, and undoubtedly every other warship remaining in the home fleet, demanding to know why they were being ordered to retreat from the defense of their home planet." Emil couldn't blame them. "Get me a general comm," she ordered, "and let me know when all the fighters are on board." The communications watch gave her a thumbs up. Emil took a deep breath, feeling constellations shake around her and hoping they didn't lose the hyperdrive before it was too late. "To the sailors and marines of the home fleet and the people of Naboo, this is Admiral Emil Agathon of the Royal Naboo Space Navy," she said. "I'll keep this short. Republic forces have invaded this system and overrun the major cities on Naboo and the moons. Most of this fleet has given their lives in defense of Naboo. This is not a retreat. The Queen is safe. I repeat, Queen Amidala of Naboo is safe. We're going to leave this system. We're going to rendezvous with the First and Second Fleets. And then we're going to come back here and give the Republic a good kick in the ass and show them what they weren't smart enough to learn from the Trade Federation. We are Naboo. We do not surrender. We endure. And we will return." She gave the communications watch the signal to cut the connection. A moment later, he reported, "All starfighters are on board, including Indies." Emil looked at the displays, where Indefatigable, Inspire, and Superb were maneuvering to place themselves between the Republic fleet and what remained of the home fleet. Hundreds of escape pods, both Naboo and Republic, littered the area where the battlefield had been, some of them shooting away towards the planet or moons, others drifting dead in space.
"Give the Queen my love,"
Irte said. Then her image vanished from the holotable. "All ships, prepare to jump to hyperspace," Emil ordered. "Jump in 3, 2. "May our ancestors forgive us," Lestari whispered, "because our children never will. Jump!"